and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show Network's dedicated manga, comic, and sequential visual media podcast. With me this week are Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
That one's me. That came out incredibly unenthusiastic.
Yeah, and that's so unlike you. So how have we all been, guys?
As I said earlier, I'm falling apart at the seams, loving every minute of it.
It's no point saying, as I said earlier, referring to the bit that the listeners couldn't hear.
Yeah, true. But anyway.
Mick, we don't have listeners.
All right, I'll rephrase. That our listener couldn't hear.
No, no, no. What he meant was cultists, Mick. We've got cultists.
You've got to be careful how you say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And where?
How have you been, Mick? How have you been, Andrew?
My sinuses are trying to burst out my face.
I forgot spring is in the air, isn't it?
Spring, winter, something. Life is pain.
Ouch. Me, I've just been, you know, tootling along, carrying on, doing stuff, surviving.
Anyway, enough of the...
Life's a party here on 4Panel.
Yeah, I guess while we're waiting for the sweet release of Death, we may as well talk about some comic book news.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, first up, we've got something that... did we even not talk about it last week? Or did... This happened at some point in the past, and I can't remember if it was in enough time for us to have forgotten to talk about it last week. But basically, Ava DuVernay is going to direct a New Gods movie for DC.
We didn't talk about this last week, and Ava DuVernay directing New Gods, you're on about like Orion and the rest of them.
Yeah, like Orion, Light Ray, Highfather.
What was the one? Was it Metatron who was on the chair?
Yeah, that's Lazy Boy.
Yeah, I always found it funny because Metatron being the voice of God, and obviously he's going around being smart-ass all the time while he's sitting down in his favourite thinker pose, going, look at me, I'm smart.
Actually, the people on Apocalypse are New Gods as well, aren't they, with Darkseid and Grandma Fetish, Roby Man.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Shaggy.
Hold on, Grandma Fetish, is that an actual character?
No, it's Granny Goodness.
She's a grandma dressed up in like chainmail and leather bondage gear.
Yeah,
stand by what I said.
It will be when I launch my new comic book, Grandma Fetish and Her Adventures in Space.
That's a Barbarella reboot too far, Mick.
But the beauty is I can still cast Jane Fonda in the movie. Everything, you know, what goes around comes around.
Oh,
the key scenes in the movie.
Oh,
you're welcome.
Oh, that's just no.
Right.
Anyway, a New Gods movie could be fun. I mean, I was rewatching Thor Ragnarok recently, and I love all like the weird Jack Kirby design stuff in that. So like a whole movie of that would be pretty great in my book.
Yeah, but I mean, then you'd have to cast Darkseid or Darkseid. What is it? Is it Darkseid or Darkseid?
I'm pretty sure it's Darkseid.
Yeah,
I've always pronounced it Darkseid, but they spell it S-E-I-D, which some people have said is seed. I'm like, no.
Look, it's the English language, Rob. Who even cares? None of it makes sense.
Not only is it the English language, but it's also the American variant of it.
Yes. No, no, it's a made-up American variant of the English language. That's the worst one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, New Gods. Thing is, if they're the New Gods, right, does that mean the old gods were actually a thing? So War of the Gods from the 90s was actually... Because that was a DC crossover. But the New Gods were around during that time as well, if I remember rightly.
So, that's actually a fun bit of trivia, because the original Jack Kirby New Gods series, well, I say series, like multiple series, is actually technically take place in the Marvel Universe.
What?
Because the idea is Jack Kirby originally wanted to write the series for Marvel, in which it would be set in the future, after like Thor and all the old gods die in Ragnarok, but okay. Marvel kind of vetoed that series, so he went over write for DC, and he made the New Gods. But the whole point of the New Gods is they travel everywhere through boom tubes, right?
Oh, yes.
And specifically in the description, it says boom tubes create a portal through time and space. So the idea is that this series is actually set like in the Marvel Universe, and the New Gods just keep popping over to DC.
Wow.
And I always thought that was cool.
That's amazing. I like that.
Jack Kirby was great, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Ah, so, yeah. And it's Ava DuVernay directing this.
Director of that A Wrinkle in Time, which people seem to like, and I haven't seen because who's got time for the cinema?
This is true. I've heard good things about it. Better things than I've heard about Ready Player One. So,
yeah, well, the rest of the world is wrong. It's an enjoyable romp, and that's all it needs to be.
It's nostalgia. There's nothing wrong with nostalgia.
Wait, is this Ready Player One? Which film are we talking about?
You say that, but nostalgia is not what it used to be.
Yeah, it's Ready Player One.
I haven't seen any of the films.
Whatever.
No, none of them.
Anyway.
I mean, except for Thor Ragnarok, because I already mentioned I'd seen that.
Yes, yes, yes. And you've seen Black Panther, obviously.
I have seen Black Panther.
Eventually.
I hope you have.
Well, statistically, literally everyone has, so yes, yes, I have.
Excellent, excellent. Anyway, what else have we got in the news?
We have got the fact that a brand new shiny Deadpool 2 trailer is out.
Ooh.
Which gives us kind of a better look at a lot of the characters, and finally kind of lays out what the plot of the film is going to be.
No, they haven't gone and ruined it by putting a plot in, have they?
Oh, yep. Unfortunately, this one is going to have a story.
Oh, no.
Is that story Cable turns up from the future, Deadpool cracks a few jokes, Cable thinks, huh, you're funny, they team up, go shoot stuff?
No, actually. Cable's basically going to be the villain.
Ooh, controversial.
So apparently the still unnamed character played by Julian Dennison that we've seen in the trailer, Cable's going to travel back in time to try and kill him. I think as a, like, he's going to grow up to destroy the world or something like that scenario. And Deadpool's going to try and stop him. And in the process assemble X-Force, who, as Domino points out, are a little derivative.
Yes, they are. But at least
Until she meets the Inhumans.
No, I was about to say, at least they're not X-Factor. X-Factor had a big, strong guy whose codename was literally Strong Guy.
I'll have no bad things said about Strong Guy.
No, I love Strong Guy as a character. He was brilliant. I just wish they could have picked a better name for him than Strong Guy.
But that's part of the charm, that he's just like, well, I'm a strong guy. What if my name's Strong Guy?
Yeah.
I can just imagine if more X-Men did that. It's like they charge into battle led by their noble leader, Laserface. And his friend/rival Stabby Hands.
And their mentor, Wheelies.
Wheelie, yes.
It's Wheels McKenzie.
Oh, no. Storm would be called Windy Woman.
Furry Guy.
Blue Teleporting Elf Man.
Oh, but what would they call Beast? Would they just call him Labrador or something?
Furry Guy.
Hey?
Furry Guy.
Oh, I was going to go with Labrador. Maybe he just likes his belly rubbed.
But surely Beast would have to change his name to Furry Guy from his original codename, which would be Mr. Big Hands. Wink.
What was it? Angel would be, I've got wings. Or just wings.
I mean, to be fair, before he became Archangel, that was basically his whole thing.
Yes. That's why I said, I've got wings. He has to keep pointing out.
No, that's great, Warren. I'm sure we'll defeat Magneto if you just flap at him.
I think it's the most obvious thing. Everyone's just wondering, he's got no other powers except he's got wings.
Hold on. You just referred to Magneto. Don't you mean Metal Attraction Man?
Oh, yes, yes, I forgot. Yeah, Metal Attraction Man. Quicksilver, what would he be?
really fast guy.
Oh, I've just realised, though, the best one would actually be Scarlet Witch when she, with her original power set of hex powers, because she would be clumsy girl.
Yes, that is an accurate description for Scarlet Witch.
And I'd have got away with it too if it hadn't been for clumsy girl.
Using her powers to make that pot of paper clips fall over.
Oh.
What other news can we ruin?
There are other things happening. Any other comic book news?
Yep, just kind of a follow-up thing on something we've kind of talked about before, which is full confirmation that Chris Evans will be leaving the Marvel Universe after Avengers 4.
Are we talking about Avengers, the fourth movie, or Avengers 4, as in the two-part thing?
Well,
Avengers 4 will be part two of the two-part thing.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it will.
Because that will be the fourth Avengers movie.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. My numbers game is not up to scratch this day.
You just got confused because of Civil War, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
That is like Avengers 2.5.
Oh, in my brain, there's already been three Avengers movies, so Infinity War is actually the fourth one.
Yeah, but that's only in your mind. For the rest of the world...
You know what? No, you know what, Mick? I'm going to give him that one. I think it genuinely is quite confusing that Civil War isn't an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think the title kind of gives it away.
But the content doesn't.
No, but, you know, when you...
Yeah,
when
the title only gives it away if you're one of those squares who calls it Captain America : Civil War.
What? Like...
Like a nerd.
Sorry.
Cool kids just call it Civil War.
Sorry, when you said Captain America : Civil War, it made it sound like he had some problem.
No, probiotic diet. The good bacteria fighting against the bad bacteria to give Captain America the relief he needed.
Well, he is like in his 80s now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's getting on a bit. He probably needs all that fibre help.
Turns out I've inadvertently spoiled Ant-Man and the Wasp 3.
Hold on, wouldn't that be Ant-Man 2 and the Wasp? No, be Ant-Man 3, no.
I see your numbers game is not good this day.
Yeah, it's because my numbers game don't care.
Two Wasp, 3 Antius.
Anyway, we got some very, very rare manga news.
What, news about rare mangas?
No, just it's sporadic that we have manga news in general. Anything related to manga that's interesting, I should say. First up, my anime list, that's social media for anime and manga, has actually opened a manga store with titles from Viz and Kodansha, which is surprising. You know, anyone who's been a user of my anime list for a while will have seen that they're opening it, but... The surprising thing for me with this news article is that Anime News Network, where most of the anime and manga news is obtained from, only decided to report on it on the 15th of March, whereas everyone who's a MAL user has known about it for like the last month, at least.
Well, you know, to be fair, we're not exactly finger on the pulse kind of people, are we?
Not when it comes to manga.
Not when it comes to our polls, to be fair.
But then it's not like Anime News Network has had a busy workload to get through and so couldn't get to this story.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the store is actually open now, so, you know, you can buy various titles from there. They're available.
I mean, I assume you can buy various titles from there if you live within the area of the store, which is...
It's online. It's all online. It's all digital.
Oh, okay.
It's all digital.
That's quite a big area to live in.
Yeah, but I'm actually happy about. The store is available in the US and in the UK, which is a big change than normal. Canada, Germany, Australia, France, Poland, Spain, Italy, Netherlands, Russian Federation, Sweden, Portugal, Romania, Finland, Hungary, Greece, Denmark, Belgium, New Zealand, Czech Republic, Austria, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Ireland.
Can I correct you there?
Yeah.
The Czech Republic now preferred to be known as Czechia.
Okay, Czechia. Austria, Bulgaria, Lithuania, Ireland, Croatia, Slovakia, Estonia, Slovenia, Latvia, Cyprus, Luxembourg, and Malta. Now, I just want to point out one thing. Aside from Canada and the US, right, and Australia, right, the only other, sorry, Canada, US, Australia, New Zealand, everywhere else is in Europe.
Yeah.
But there's a massive anime and manga community in South America, and they've been completely ignored.
There may be reasons.
Mm. And also, what I assume is not the My Anime List user base mostly based in the US and the UK?
Probably,
slash
yeah.
Europe.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they are. So that would explain it. Anyway. That was...
Yeah, you're not just bitter because they've almost definitely banned you.
No, I'm still on there. And still
we'll top, work on that, Andrew.
I'm still on there and still top reviewer. They can't get rid of me that easy. Anyway. Better news than that. Two manga are getting animated. First up is Vinland Saga, which I'm really happy about.
Bob, yeah. You're supposed to start with the one that I wouldn't care about so that I can say, but who cares about that?
All right, okay. I'll start with that one then.
No, it's too late. We're talking about Vinland Saga now because it's awesome.
Yes.
Right, I'm just going to go off and have a three-course meal.
Well, we wax lyrical
you
about
do
Vikings.
That. We gave you Vinland Saga, Mick. We gifted its benevolence unto you. And what did you do? You threw
and
it, back,
Lord,
in
I gazed upon
you
it,
threw it went, back in our faces, Mick.
I gazed upon all its magnificence and went, meh.
You were found unworthy of the Vinland Saga, Mick.
You say that, but I can shove this hammer where the sun don't shine, sunshine.
So it's that place just outside Middlesbrough, is it?
No, it is Middlesbrough.
Oh,
which will mean nothing to 90% of our listeners.
No, it won't. Vinland Saga is...
Nothing we say means anything to our listener base.
No.
We all just sat there at home yeah. Listening to three confused men ramble incoherently about something. You're not entirely sure what, but maybe if you keep listening to this and all our other episodes, you'll find out. It's the only way to know, listeners.
And don't forget that we do drop clues into our other podcasts.
Yes, we do. They're like breadcrumbs. Tasty breadcrumbs. Vinland Saga is getting an anime, and the studio that's actually animating it is Wit Studio. And what's actually interesting is Wit Studio is the studio that has actually done a few other titles, Cabinary of the Iron Fortress, The Ancient Magus Bride, and Attack on Titan. So this should have some really good production values.
Because if nothing else, Attack on Titan was a very good-looking anime series.
Exactly. And so that gives
with
me some
top-notch music as well. Ooh. Vinland Saga with that kind of music.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm having a moment.
Oh, no.
I am really looking forward to this, and it's not the only manga that I've been following that I'm really looking forward to getting an animation. Although, I mean, the teaser that they put out for this Vinland Saga announcement was just basically coloured scenes that are covers off the manga, right? When it comes to Hinamaru Zumo, though, they chose a slightly different approach with their teaser for this, and the approach they chose was, I know, this is a manga about sumo, so it is actually a very, very good manga as well about sumo. And if you are interested in sumo or you just, you know, want a good sports manga that's got really tense action and lots of, you know, gutsy performances and little guys throwing big guys over their heads, then this is the manga for you.
Yeah, but I don't know if it can make it as an anime.
Yeah.
It's going to have to go up against the now classic Super Duper Sumo.
I think it might be able to hold its own if they do the manga justice. Because Hinamaru Zumo is it's the story of a small student called Ushio Hinamaru who, until he stopped, you know, his height basically stopped growing 3 years before, he was one of the potential future rulers of Japanese sumo. He'd be one of the superstars. And then he stopped growing, and then everyone kind of lost confidence in him because sumo is all about big men throwing each other off the ring. And so this is all about him and how he struggled back into the world of sumo despite being very, very short. And yeah, I really like it. It's very, very intense. And the trailer for this, they had couple of sumo guys and then swords for some reason.
Swords?
Yeah, because the way they do it in the manga is that they liken certain moves in sumo to certain moves used in between samurai and the class sumo practitioners as warriors. And so when they're in the ring, the reason why they're naked and everything like that is because it's purely about their strength and their skill. And they're basically, the whole idea is to kill your opponent in the metaphorical sense. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the super duper sumos would hit things with their bums.
Yeah. Yeah, they would.
I've just Googled it and now I'm remembering that actually maybe that was a very, very bad TV series instead of just a kind of forgettable one.
Yeah, it wasn't very good, Andrew.
This animation looks very horrible.
It's Teen Titans Go level, isn't it?
It hurts my eyes.
Okay. So, yeah, Hinamaru Zumo is getting an anime, and I am looking forward to it. And,
okay.
Yeah, I am expecting a lot of sumo cosplay in the future at various conventions around the world.
But that's because you live in Middlesbrough.
No. At various conventions around the world, I'm expecting loads of people just turning up in, like, sumo suits.
Oh, there's going to be some hairy sumos.
Hey, I told Mick about these two stories before the show, and he went to Viking sumo.
No, I merely stated that was a crossover I didn't want to see.
But I do. I want Viking sumo to be a thing.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Mick? Viking sumo is an amazing idea. Like, does he still have the horned helmet and, like, the massive beard?
Yes, he must.
You see, this is why I didn't want to mention it on the program.
He's covered in, like, runic tattoos.
Yeah, with his furry loincloth or whatever it is.
Yes.
And they're busy trying to throw each other out of the ring.
Anyway, before this flight of fancy goes...
Quite frankly, Mick, I find the fact that you don't accept Viking sumo as your lord and saviour some horrible, horrible body shaming.
Yeah, but what you've done there, Andrew, is you've confused me with someone who cares.
He's got you there, Andrew.
He has indeed. That's a fairly effective counter to my argument.
You can't argue with facts.
Your airtight logic is indeed unassailable.
Anyway, on that note, let's take a break.
Hold on, no, we have one more bit of news.
Ooh. Oh, that's right, because the king is dead. Long live the king. And Human Watch is dead and gone.
Oh,
but we have a new strand. Krypton Watch.
Hang on, I take it you're referring to the new series relating to Superman and not to...
That's right, I'm talking to the Superman prequel that no one ever wanted.
Right, I was just checking...
Actually, before we start, I'm just going to do a public service announcement for anyone who wants to watch it. Everyone dies at the end, the planet explodes, and Superman goes off to Earth. There, saved you a lot of time.
But depending on ratings, of course, that could not happen for another 10 seasons.
And actually, if I'm watching the trailers right, that might not happen at all. Hasn't someone gone back in time to Krypton? Wasn't
right.
You're going to have to clear this up for me, Mick.
The plot of Krypton is Adam Strange has gone back in time to Krypton to speak to Kal-El's grandfather about the future of Krypton. And to prove that who he says he is, he has Superman's cape. But Superman's cape is running out like the sands of time. And he's warning of an impending disaster and in a sort of like only you can save mankind type way. The setup in the pilot is that Kal-El's grandfather's grandfather, so that'd be his great-great-great-sometime-great-grandfather, gets stripped of all his title, lands. And this is the other thing as well, that the House of El is referred to as a guild rather than a house. It's bizarre. But they get stripped of their emblem, they get stripped of all title and rank, and end up being sort of third-class citizens, restricted in where they can go, what they can do. There's a curfew. And it's because he refused to bend the knee to the voice of Rao. Now, as you know, Rao is the god of Krypton.
This is starting to sound a lot like a game of Kryptonian Thrones.
Yeah. The good news is it's not DC's version of Inhuman. That's the good news.
Well, that's something at least.
Yeah. The production values are good. Apparently everyone on Krypton is English, which is unusual in these kind of shows.
When you say English, you mean English, not American English.
Yeah, they have English accents.
Wow. I knew the British Empire was big, but I didn't realise it was that big.
Stretched all the way to Krypton.
Is it because they're all like smarty pants scientists?
Yeah. And villainous.
You know, I like to think that's the one service we've provided to the world, is proving that not everyone with an English accent is very intelligent.
Yeah. So I've watched the first episode, which aired last night, and it's all right. It didn't have me screaming, oh my God, what have you done to the mythos? But it has a very basic flaw, which something like Gotham, which was also a prequel that no one ever wanted, doesn't have. When you're watching Gotham, the characters in it are all characters that you've met before in different incarnations. So we've all met Jim Gordon. Yeah. We've met Penguin. We've met Bruce, and we've met Alfred before.
We've got some idea of what their behaviours are going to be, what they're going to be like.
But what it doesn't do is introduce us to Jim Gordon's great-granddad before Jim Gordon was born.
What, you mean John Wayne Gordon?
Sorry?
John Wayne Gordon, the sheriff.
But this is the point. Krypton covers a load of characters you've never heard of, with this sort of vague link that at some point in the future, and there are, apart from Adam Strange's introduction, there are other elements that come into play.
And this is the Adam Strange who is kind of DC's equivalent of Flash Gordon, Dan Dare type character.
In fairness, in Krypton, Adam Strange appears to be a delinquent in a hoodie.
What are you doing? Adam Strange is DC's Dan Dare / Flash Gordon character. He's got a girlfriend.
A time-traveling delinquent in a hoodie, trust me.
He's got a helmet and a ray gun and a jetpack.
Look, the production costs had to be cut somewhere.
They made Adam Strange a delinquent in a hoodie.
Also, is perhaps Adam Strange in this purely because CW already have the rights to Rip Hunter?
Probably.
Could be. Could be.
And they needed a DC-based person who can jump dimensions and travel through time and stuff.
But so, Adam Strange doesn't really travel through time, though, does he? He just, like, goes to Ran.
Yep.
No. In Krypton, he travels through time and space as a delinquent in a hoodie.
Does he have a boom tube?
He travels through time and space in a hoodie.
That's why I'm asking, does he have a boom tube? Didn't we just say boom tubes are traveling right through time and space?
Right.
Is Adam Strange actually a Marvel Comics character?
I'm going to say this one more time because you're clearly not getting it because you keep asking for extra detail. As far as Krypton is concerned, he travels through space and time in a hoodie. There is no other explanation given, just that, at the moment.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you know, it's Superman, right? Or it's Superman's mythos. And the thing that made Superman a big hit all those years ago was the fact that he was an alien with superpowers on Earth.
He was basically Hercules going around doing good.
Yeah. And he could do good because he could fly and he could leap buildings in a single bound and run very fast and had skin like steel and all the rest of it. The problem is you put Superman's family on Krypton, where they don't have a yellow sun.
Yeah, I was about to say, where they have no powers and it just turns into a...
It basically just turns into... It's not even Game of Thrones, because there's not really that much magic in there.
No, there's a lot of science, though, Mick.
Not really. Because guess what? They have a fight in a bar and another fight in a corridor. And he gets shot at with a gun, but it's not a very sciencey gun.
So you're telling me that Krypton, the home of DC's entire scientific body. You know, Krypton was literally just a planet of scientists, wasn't it?
Scientists and warriors.
Yeah.
And lawmakers.
Yeah.
Lawyers, warriors, and scientists, and poor people. And apparently, Kandor City was always in a jar.
What?
Yeah, because it's all set in Kandor City, and Kandor City, you know the pictures of Gallifrey when they went there with Peter Capaldi's doctor?
Yeah.
Kandor City looks like that.
So Kandor City is in a bottle right now.
So if the fate of Kandor City follows through the way that we recognize it from the comics, Kandor City will become the city in a bottle in a bottle.
Yeah, but it saves on the production cost.
I mean, unless Brainiac just like shrinks it down, says, "Oh, look, it's already in a bottle. That's convenient."
Plus free packaging.
Oh.
Now, I cannot reveal whether Brainiac turns up or not. Yes, he does.
Yeah, I kind of figured. He's in the trailer.
That doesn't necessarily mean he turns up. We've all seen trailers where the thing doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know, but they made a big deal about it being in the trailer.
Well, they made a lot of the thing in the Fantastic trailer. Like, remember that great shot of him jumping out of a helicopter?
Yeah.
And that shot did make it into the movie on a screen in the background of a different scene.
Yeah.
That movie.
So is Krypton good then or not, Mick?
One of those ones where it's difficult to tell because I haven't done the traditional thing of a 2-hour pilot.
Okay.
So a lot of it is introducing the various players and setting out the stall as to which side they're on. There's a little bit of what happened before. There's a little bit of what happens now that Superman's grandfather is like 17 years old. There's intrigue and mystery. There's the introduction of the family of Zod and all the rest of it. So my initial reaction is one of meh, but then that was my initial reaction when they announced Krypton, 3 or 4 years ago. I'll probably give it another couple of episodes, and it, unlike Inhumans, which, you know, looked like it was on a downward spiral to start with, this actually looks like it could have some promise. So,
in other words, this actually looks like it actually has production values.
Oh, it certainly has production values. You definitely know that you're not, on Earth.
So Lockjaw's paw isn't just, like, on a stick coming in from the side.
No. And what they haven't done is taken away any possibility of any special effects sequences by crippling all the actors to start with. I mean, obviously, you've got the basic thing that it's set on Krypton, so there's no Kryptonian superheroes running around. However, with rumours of Brainiac and Doomsday appearing in the show, that will come, I suspect.
See, I really want that now, though. I really want there to be some costumed vigilante on Krypton who just says, "I am Night Wingman."
Well, you know, it's the it's the prequel to Superman. It's about Kryptonians running around. So there's just going to be this guy in a cape running around going, "Stop! I am man."
I mean, to be fair, Nightwing was actually like a Kryptonian vigilante.
Yeah,
and that's where Dick Grayson got the name from.
Oh, hang on. Are you pulling my chin, or is that a real thing?
I know that's a chin. Was that not like a deliberate thing you were making reference to?
No, I was just making that up.
That is shooting for the basket from like the other side of the court and making it.
Because I was making I thought Batman, Superman, they're an odd couple.
So maybe that's what Kal-El's grandfather's going to become.
Nightwing Man.
Anyway. But yeah, so there's lots of references to people that we've heard of, and you know, there's Superman's cape there, and it looks like it's going to mix up the story of Krypton a little bit. I mean, I'm not sure where the Rao plotline's going to go, whether this is actually going to be a representative of Rao, or whether it's just one of those head of a religion seizing power in the name of a god or whatever it is. But, you know, it's a thing, and it's on, and I'll keep you posted on the next exciting episode of Krypton Watch.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there, and to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk. Click on the shop and buy some of our lovely wares. Buy them all.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
And welcome back to Four Panel, the only podcast that's brave enough to call you scum to your face and you love it, you filthy animals.
More true than you think, because...
Andrew's opinions are not necessarily those of the Geek Show Network or Four Panel as a podcast.
Or of Andrew, for that matter.
No. I can't remember the last time I said something and actually meant it. Although one thing I do mean is that we've got some comics and we're probably going to talk about them now.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm so tired. This podcast was a horrible mistake.
We'll be quick. I've got volume 2 of Briggs Land, which is by Brian Wood and Mick Chater. And this is from Dark Horse. Now, basically, I've got rednecks. It's a bad case of rednecks. I might have to see a doctor. Briggs Land is, for those of you who have forgotten from a long time ago, Briggs Land is basically a private area in the US where they basically sectioned it off and turned it into their own community where they have their own rules separate from the US government. And they're saying, look, we're Americans just like you are. We just live by a different set of rules. You're like, well, the American government and the FBI and everyone is saying, no, you obey the American rules. You're on American soil. And they're saying, well, we're more American than you are. So there, we've got guns. And they're saying, we've got guns. And they're saying, and everyone's got guns. And everyone is fighting against each other. It's basically a redneck religious cult. But the interesting thing I'm finding with Briggs Land is that Grace Briggs, who is kind of the matriarch of the Briggs family, she's taking control of the family from her husband who took a shot at the president, basically, and now he's in prison. But he's not happy about that. In his world, the place of women is in the home and making babies, and Grace Briggs does not agree with that at all. And she's quite no-nonsense, and she is willing to do all sorts to get the job done. In her mind, the way the community has been is no longer the way things should be. They didn't all go to Briggs Land to basically be treated like scum. They didn't go there to be treated like outcasts. They went to Briggs Land to basically find a home, to find some kind of peace, some kind of freedom. And now they're in this kind of, they're trapped in this enclave of just nut jobs. There are literal nut jobs around them. So, and the nut jobs include people from the army, people from the government, people from the FBI. So, yeah, this is getting to an interesting stage where Grace's husband, who is in prison, she's managed to turn the tables on him, and she's taken full control of the family, even though he tried to do kind of a mini coup d'etat. A couple of Canadian tourists stumble onto Briggs Land, and they get trapped, they get imprisoned, but then they're eventually freed. But the story's playing out. You know, we mentioned Game of Thrones. It's kind of like a redneck Game of Thrones. I'll be honest. There are elements of Game of Thrones in this. I'm reading this. I'm going, that's a bit Game of Thronesy. That's a bit Game of Thronesy. That's very Game of Thronesy. So, yeah, there's a lot of... it's toned down on the violence in this issue, in this volume, sorry, which is called Lone Wolves. It's a lot more focused on developing the characters and developing the story scenario, which I like. It's got me interested in reading volume 3. I do want to know what happens in the next volume, and I shall keep you posted on that, because I never actually thought that reading about these isolated communities where they have their own rules and where everybody is a bit of a redneck would actually be interesting, but it really is.
Well, I'm glad we found your niche.
Yes, rednecks. A bit of a non-niche for me, isn't it?
It is.
Also, are we going to rename this the Game of Thrones episode?
No.
Because it has been name-checked a couple of times now.
Yeah, I know. Maybe maybe just Gur Martin would not be happy.
It's fine. I'm just saying, in the game of comic space podcasts, you move on to the next review or you die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that would be me.
Was that a hint then?
Yes.
It was.
Okay. So my first review, which has been queued up for now for about 3 weeks, is Marvel Zombies Assemble Volume 2, but I'll also cover Volume 1 as well, just to be on the safe side.
But you covered Volume 1, didn't
no,
you?
No, I don't think I ever did.
Did you not? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Marvel Zombies Manga Assemble, Avengers Assemble. It's a tricky one to say. Marvel Zombies Assemble 2 Manga.
Those are definitely words. Are they in the right order?
Marvel Zombies 2 Assemble. This is the manga of a Marvel comic called Zombies Assemble 2.
Right.
Ta-da! So this has been written and drawn by Yasaku Komiyama and translated by Jim Zub, who you may know from Samurai Jack and Wayward.
And lots of Marvel stuff now.
That would explain why this has been so long since Wayward had a new issue. So, yeah, it's all right, kinda-ish. Basically, if you imagine all of the Avengers, but drawn in a manga style, okay?
Yeah.
And then while they're kicking around inside Avengers Tower, one of Tony's scientist employees has kind of hit upon a formula that sort of turns people into zombies, and they've managed to figure out a cure, but unfortunately there's not much of the cure left. And besides which, it doesn't work on the strain of the virus that's currently attacking Thor, Black Widow, even Hulk at one point. So imagine the Avengers turning into zombies.
Didn't they do this already?
Oh, there's been a ton of Marvel Zombies stuff.
Yeah, but this has been drawn in the manga style.
Okay.
And it's all right. I've not read any of the other Marvel Zombie stuff. It's an interesting twist. There's a few twists and turns. If anything, it goes beyond the point of enough twists and turns to keep you interested and gets to the point where, oh, no, not another plot twist. You know, almost to the point where you think, oh, this new character who's turned up, what's going to happen there? Is it going to turn out to be Black Widow's long-lost brother or, you know, something like that? It's those kind of twists that you go, really? But other than that,
could this new person actually be the X-Men's enemy woman, what sometimes looks like other people?
Yeah, but thing is, I'm just thinking about the fact that it's Marvel and it's manga. And so I'm just thinking that Black Widow's long-lost brother is actually going to be Hawkeye.
Well, no. I should point out at this moment that sometimes when I start sort of theorising about how a plot twist could have turned out, I realise that you take me literally, Rob. There is no one turns up who is actually her long-lost brother, but some of the twists become so ridiculous that that's where you start thinking, is the next twist going to be that?
Yeah, I know.
Right.
I was just running with the ball since you gave it to me.
What if Iron Man was actually made of a gold titanium alloy all along?
No, take the ball away from me now.
So, yeah, it's basically a story about the Avengers fighting a zombie outbreak, but in manga form. And as such, it's perfectly serviceable. It runs for 2 volumes. There's a lot of humour in it. And it's over in 2 volumes.
It's only 2 volumes long?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Nice and compact.
Yeah. It revisits some of the origins from the MCU with slight twists, but there's a definite, when they're doing the Super Soldier program on Steve Rogers, for example, in flashback, that there's a definite similarity between the scientist who does it in the manga and the one who does it in Captain America, the first Avenger.
Is that Stanley Tucci in the film?
It is, yeah.
Thought it was.
Is it Stanley Tucci or Stanley Tucci?
Oh, who knows? It's Darkseid all over again.
Yeah. Hold on. What? Stanley Tucci's playing Darkseid?
I bet he could pull it off.
Wow. I want to see that film now.
Yeah.
But yeah, if nothing else, it's worth looking at just so you can see Zombie Thor in action.
I feel like Stanley Tucci would be a really passive-aggressive Darkseid.
Isn't Darkseid just passive-aggressive in general?
Yeah, but I mean, lots of side-eye.
Yeah, but that's what...
side Omega beams.
Yeah, but that's what Darkseid does all of the time. He never, you know, he'd look at you straight and then he'll turn as if he's going to try and figure out the anti-life equation again. And then he'll just look at you at the side of his eye and say, go do it or you die.
But he doesn't have pupils.
Just bringing it back to the book that we were reviewing, if I may, for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be boring.
Interestingly.
Yeah.
Marvel Zombies 2 appears to have fallen through some kind of time warp because on its inside, well, I guess as it's a manga back cover, it's got coming soon, Zombies Assemble Volume 1.
Wow.
Maybe Marvel Zombies Volume 2 is what Adam Strange uses for the first time in space.
Or maybe Marvel thought, hey, manga, you read them the opposite way around. Maybe we should publish them in that order too.
Or maybe if you press certain bits of the manga, it opens a boom tube that travels through time and space.
You just like saying boom tube, don't you?
Yes. Anyway, Andrew.
Yep. So I have been reading Michael Chabon's The Escapist, Amazing Adventures, which is by lots of people, including Kyle Baker, Eduardo Barreto, Brian Bollard, Dan Berrettin, John Cassidy, Michael Chabon, Howard Chaykin, Gene Colan, Steve Conley, Colleen Coover, Alan Curran, Alex DeCampi, Pharrell Dalrymple, Jed Doherty, Michael T. Gilbert, Glenn David Gold, David Hahn, Dean Haspiel, Paul Hornsheimer, Joel Jones, Matt Kint, Ken Christensen, Jay Lee, Tony Leonard, Steve Lieber, Val Mayrick, Kevin McCarthy, Mike Mignola, Stuart Moore, C. Scott Moss, Jeff Parker, James Peaty, Harvey Picar, M.K. Iperka, Roger Peterson, Jill Carla Schwartz, Bill Sinowitz, John K. Snyder III, Jim Starlin, Brian K. Vaughan, Chris Ware, Chris Varner, Eric White, and Phil Winslade.
My God, how many?
That's all we have time for this week.
At which point during that list did you just start reeling off names from your bookshelf?
No, this is the entire list of authors and artists. Because what this is a, well, like 400-page collection of some 26 stories, all based around the idea of the escapist, who, if you didn't listen, or more than likely have forgotten, last time we talked about the escapist, is a completely fictional creation of Michael Chabon, who wrote a book called The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which was about two made-up Golden Age comic book writers, with the idea being that they're kind of an amalgamation of, like, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, Shuster and Siegel, Joe Simon, and it's just like all those other Golden Age comic book creators.
Kane and Finger.
Yeah, mostly Finger, though. Well, I suppose Kane was very good at drawing a picture of something that looked nothing like Batman and then spending years claiming credit for creating well-known characters in the world.
It's not about drawing the character, it's about claiming the credit.
Exactly. Oh, if only Jack Kirby had learned that lesson. I'm sad now. Anyway, The Escapist. Yeah, this is just kind of a series of short comics sort of based around this character, but with the idea being that someone's dug up and collected all the old Escapist comics.
All right.
And yeah, there's lots of fun stuff, kind of various references sort of to various different ages of comics. Like a Jim Starlin just like this full-on weird, trippy cosmic story about a side character called Luna Moth, like has to fight the Grim Reaper on a stage made of skulls.
Sounds awesome.
And of course, there's the obligatory Japanese manga version of The Escapist.
Because there has to be.
Yes. And like there's even like a little text bit at the back explaining the history of this being like a rip-off by, well, not basically like a licensing deal between The Escapist and Kodansha Comics to publish sort of its Japanese adventures But after this story, the series was completely discontinued because it's a little bit racist.
Wow.
No.
Like, it's very much Marvel manga verse. This is a Japanese story clearly drawn by a white guy. But yeah, I like it because a lot of it is kind of a send-up of various eras of comics. Like, you've got one called The Escapist's Girlfriend, Miss Plum Blossom, which is very clearly a send-up of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane, and even includes kind of a Hausfrau Fruit Pies advert in which the escapist defeats a bunch of criminals with the power of frozen desserts.
Awesome.
And yeah, there's lots of good stories in here. But I think perhaps my favourite is, let's see if I can... Yeah, it's Union City Blues, which was written by Stuart Moore with art by Phil Winslade. And basically the idea is the escapist gets called in to solve a union dispute where a bunch of workers have kind of started protesting outside a factory, and the escapist arrives to try and convince them to go back to work. But then he starts hearing about how, you know, the factory's abusing its workers and not paying them. So eventually he turns against its filthy capitalist overlord and flies off in his escapist jet, only for suddenly on the next page the art to completely change as the escapist swerves back around, guns down some of the workers and orders the rest to return to work, because that's the only way capitalism will survive, goddammit. And then at the bit, there's like a text bit at the back explaining how the original writers and artists, partway through the story, started demanding they form a union. And so were summarily fired and replaced with more cooperative workers.
See, I thought there was a Running Man thing going on for a second there. Just the escapist being Arnold Schwarzenegger going, I will not shoot on idiots and civilians, then getting knocked out and then massacre.
No, it's not like that. But yeah, it's good. It's definitely fun for if you're like me and are quite interested in kind of the history of comics as a medium.
Yeah.
Because this makes a lot of references to that, which is something I greatly enjoy.
So this is more your comic book history book than...
Yeah, not like what we covered on Literary Loitering, which was literally just like an art history textbook.
Oh, that was a fun episode.
Yes, it was. Ah, so a recommend from you then, is it, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Awesome. Actually, I think we're going to have to track down a copy of Cavalier and Clay as well, because that sounds right up my alley.
Awesome, awesome. So back to me, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Right. So I'm heading over to Japan by way of Rome.
Well, if you will insist on these cheap flights.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised by this.
It's because Ryanair, that's the nearest airport to Japan that they actually do.
It's because it's Ryanair and it's always stopping to take selfies.
Oh, that's good. That's going to have mass market appeal, that joke, Rob.
I know. I know. It's an in-joke. Okay, listen to some episodes of Eclectico the Geek Show and you'll eventually get it. Anyway, this is from Humanoids, which is that interesting French publisher. And this is called Izuna. And it is by Saverio Tenuta, Bruno Letizia, and Carita Lupatelli, who are three Roman comic book creators and writers. And this is actually quite interesting because it's a very Japanese story. And I've come across some of Saverio Tenuta's work before, with stuff like Legend of the Scarlet Blades, some of his other stuff, Throne of Ice, and various things like that. And I'm a big fan of his particular style. So as soon as we got this, I was actually quite interested. And this is kind of the oversized hardback version of book one of Izuna. There's only two books in the series. And it tells the story of a time before in Japan when you had... I mean, the book refers to them as kami. It's basically taking the Japanese word for gods. And it starts off with a little overview of what is actually going on. It says that at the dawn of time, the nature spirits called kami were weary of human arrogance. And so they basically... they closed themselves off from the world and they disappeared from the hearts and minds of humans, and humans were left to fend for themselves.
And then he created the seven Dragon Balls.
No, that was Shenlong, I think the dragon was called in that. But anyway, the problem is that there is a darkness that's appeared in the world called Nogo. And this Nogo seems to be, it's a very corrupt power dealing with death and stuff like that. And so the great tree that protects the world, which, where is it? Which is called Munemori. It's been protected by the Izuna tribe, which is a tribe of white foxes who were born from the tree. And these are mythical white foxes that appear in Japanese culture. Think Okami and stuff like that. And these are they're led by what's his name?
Oh, Thingy.
Their leader is a giant white wolf called Mamoru, and he is he's a warrior through and through. But he's also a no nonsense guy. He won't like anything that has the potential for change. He's very linear in his thoughts. His thoughts are protect the tree, destroy the Nogo. That's it. And so he leads the white wolves in protecting the tree. But the tree has other ideas. The tree is sentient itself. And one of the warriors called Kenta dies. And so the tree reabsorbs and gives birth to a new baby white wolf called Kenta. But shortly after that, it also gives birth to a human baby. And the wolves have never seen a human. The human world was closed off long before the wolves existed. And so they're a bit confused by this. And the fox princess, who they call Kitsunehime in this, which I like the fact that this uses the Japanese names for these characters rather than calling them fox princess and wolf god and stuff like that. That is appealing to me because I do read a lot of manga, and so I understand what these mean. And so, they don't call them raccoon dogs or something like that. They call them tanuki. And yeah, this baby's born, and the baby is called Aki, and she grows up to be a young lady with white hair who's a bit wild. Think, I've forgotten her name. The character from Princess Mononoke.
Is that not Mononoke?
Mononoke Hime. Yeah, think her. She's Aki's a bit like her, except Aki is kind of special. And as the story goes on, you begin to understand just what is actually going on. The story then switches to the human world, where you see a guy who he's standing there and he's going, "I've killed," and he's just surrounded by the bodies of villagers. And you got these two monks who are trying to protect this woman and child. And behind this guy is his dad, and his dad's gloating over the fact that his son has just massacred an entire village single-handedly and said, "You're the perfect warrior," and his son is just almost broken from the guilt and grief of the fact that he's been manipulated into killing all these people. He's basically, they took control of his mind somehow. And so he has to deal with that. But the Shogun's forces attack, and he is kind of killed, but not. And while he's in that kind of state between life and death, he actually sees Aki, who's beyond the veil, who's actually hidden away from the human world. And so he becomes fixated on her. Then the story just progresses on as to what happens from there. And I'm not going to spoil it because this is actually a very interesting story. And Mick, you're a big fan of Wayward. So you would you would really like this.
Yeah?
Yes. This is one that you would definitely like, I reckon. It's got darkness, it's got blood, it's got violence. But it's also got a lot of Japanese folklore elements in there. And it's got interesting characters. I do like the fact that it's very, the story moves on at a very brisk pace, and I do like the fact that the characters are human. The human characters are definitely human, but it also highlights the fact that the non-human characters are also, they have human aspects. They have aspects that we can relate to.
For a minute there, I so thought you were going to say, but even the non-human characters are human too.
Now, one of the things that is a bit confusing is there's an obvious, there's a rather obvious, if a little subtle nod to kind of the Nazi stereotype in the flags of Kenshin's dad. His flag is basically red with a circle with a black symbol inside, and they're the evil side of things, by the way. Tampering with dead bodies and evil spirits and things like that. So that I found quite an interesting thing. Kitsune Hime is one of those fickle characters, but she seems to be, she's basically forced herself to be a bridge between the human world and the spirit world because she's deemed it to be necessary so that neither lose touch with each other. The conclusion of this is actually quite surprising. I didn't expect it to end the way it did, and I'm actually quite looking forward to book two because I really do want to know how this story finishes. But yeah, if you're a fan of Wayward, if you're a fan of Princess Mononoke, or if you're a fan of Japanese folklore, you really should read this. I'm surprised at how good it is.
Cool. You'll be wanting something from me now, will you?
This is up to you guys.
Yeah. No, I'm ready to go.
Okay.
So I've got one here from the author of, or from the co-creator of Yuri on Ice, Mitsuru Kubo. Someone who likes an exclamation mark, it has to be said. There are three in Yuri on Ice and two in this one. And this one is, again, which is a sort of manga Groundhog Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ferris Bueller's Groundhog Day Off, kind of, sort of.
I thought it was just basically smack them in the back of the head and they travel through time.
Well, and this is...
That's how it works. You have to smack Adam Strange on the back of the head with the copy of Marvel Zombies 2, and that's how he time travels.
We've solved it. Mick, we've solved it.
Okay, great. I'm going back to sleep now.
This is something I've been wanting to bring up with you since I started reading this. So you drew my attention to that time I got reincarnated as a slime.
Yeah.
Where the action takes place as our hero is stabbed and bleeds out in the middle of the street.
Yep.
Again, starts off with a chase down a flight of stairs where two people wind up at the bottom of the stairs bleeding out.
Yeah.
I'm spotting a theme here with the mangas you give me to review.
Someone's bleeding out.
It always ends up with someone bleeding out. And then, starts off with someone bleeding out.
Yeah, it starts off with someone bleeding out and then something weird happens.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Micah, are you prepared for this weekend's trip to the decommissioned Farming Blades Equipment Museum that we're going to?
Yes, yes, I am. I've got my sandals and my light cap.
You're not going to wear anything else?
No, because I've been told it's going to be quite warm in there.
You're going to be au naturel.
Just a mankini, that's all.
Oh, it's going to be like something from Dead Rising, isn't it?
So, anyway, back to my review. So, our hero, if you can call Imamura a hero, Kinichiro Imamura, is heading off to school on his last day. He's about to graduate from high school, and he's quite pleased about it because it's been a miserable 3 years at high school. He's been a bit of a loner. He's not really had any friends, not been a member of any clubs or anything like that. And so he graduates, and on his final day, he goes to try and go to the now disused club room of the one club that he did consider joining, which is the Oenden, which is like, it's like a Japanese cheerleading group, but it's less pom-poms and more sort of martial arts whilst cheering sort of thing. Basically, it's like a warrior chant thing.
Yeah, basically, if you were going to have a cheerleading group made of delinquents, it would be the Oenden.
Yeah.
There's a lot of flag waving involved as well.
Yes. So it's a bit more sort of in-your-face than cheerleaders.
They wear you know, the high collar jackets as well, the gakuran. They all wear that as well.
So anyway, as he's after his graduation ceremony, as he's breaking into the now disused Oenden club room, he gets spotted by someone else that he's seen. And basically, he leaps out of the window he's trying to clean through. He tries to chase her so that she doesn't tell anyone. She falls down some stairs. He falls after her. They both end up lying, unmoving, and bleeding out at the bottom of the stairs. And then wake up the same morning, but 3 years earlier. And they're both 3 years younger, but they have memories of their previous life. So they're reliving that day, but instead of it being their last day at high school, so they wake up in the morning, but 3 years ago. So it's not their last day at high school, it's their first day at high school. and they've got to do the whole kit and caboodle again. She is furious. He's not that well pleased about it. And it follows through quite nicely. There's the story of how he tries to join the Uendon because the captain of the Uendon is quite cute, and it turns out she's actually a little bit of a, shall we say, troubled individual who's scared the rest of the club away. And he makes it his mission to try and get them back. The history of the Uendon at this particular high school is that they were absorbed by the cheerleading group. And it, for the third time this episode, it turns into a sort of high school Game of Thrones as the cheerleading troop try and manipulate things so that things go wrong for the Uendon. And it's quite nice. There's some nice little touches, like the shock of the girl who wakes up 3 years earlier and goes, why are my boobs shrunk? But yeah, it's the only thing I can't understand is why she's, I mean, obviously, if she thinks he's killed her by chasing her down the stairs, you can understand why she's so angry with him 3 years ago, but you can't understand why she's got a little bit of animosity towards him at the start. So that's a little bit confusing.
Maybe it could be that there's some wibbly wobbly timey wimey nonsense involved.
It could well be, but I won't know that until volume 2 comes out.
I was just going to say, maybe she just thinks he has creepy eyes.
Everybody thinks he's got creepy everything. Basically, everybody thinks he's part of a gang. No one talks to him. He doesn't talk to anybody else. He seems to sniff his finger a lot.
Yeah, I had a flick through this, and I wasn't sure what the finger sniffing was all about.
But hey, if you've got no friends, you have to make your own entertainment, don't you? So
we are not calling this episode a Game of Finger Sniffing Thrones.
You say that.
Maybe we should call it Make Your Own Entertainment as a grim warning to anyone who listens.
Don't expect us to do it for you. So, yeah, it's called again. I'm not going to say it's a recommendation. There's some nice, again, you mentioned Wayward earlier. There's some nice translation notes at the back, which remind me of the Wayward essays that you get, including the reference to Cheer, 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 which is a 2008 movie, Japanese movie. There's a lovely one that says, Tigers, the Japanese title of this chapter, makes a pun out of the words tiger and troublemaker, and then offers no real explanation as to how it does so. But there you go. But yeah, I'll reserve judgment on whether it's a recommendation or not until I see how it pans out in volume 2. But it's not awful.
All right. Excellent.
I mean, it's not slime, but it's not awful.
Awesome. So that's it for this week then. So we'll be back next week. Until then, you can listen to all of our previous shows on anywhere you get your podcasts from. You know, so it could be Apple Podcasts, could be Audioboom, could be iHeartRadio, could be anything you want. You know, we're available everywhere. So just look for us. We are on the Geek Show Podcast Network. We've got a website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all sorts of other stuff, all the other shows on the network, and also the links to our Patreon. So support us. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. Which one's our Twitter again, Andrew?
@4PanelPodcast.
And or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. Until next week, then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.